Welcome back to Foreman & Wolf on Food & Wine. I'm Tony Foreman.
And Chef Cindy Wolf.
And Cindy, we finished the last segment when you asked me a great question about Chateauneuf du Pape, about producers. I was thinking maybe I should back up for 1 second and just talk about what that actually is, because it's one of those, because you think of Bordeaux Chateau, right? And the individual houses that produce wines. And Chateau is literally just like a big country house, pretty fancy country house in France, but a big country house. Chateauneuf du Pape was the place where the Pope, when Pope Clement in 1305 reestablished the papacy in Avignon, outside of Rome, for a period of time, he found that Avignon was a hot and smelly city in the summertime. And so to take the airs and to live a little more healthfully, a day's ride away, up the river, up the Rhone, right at a bend in the river where it was usually more breezy than anywhere else, on a hillside, he built a small palace.
Yeah. That's so small.
That small palace, around it, the monks started growing wine for him. And they found it was really good. And now you have a wine growing culture around that literally has more than 330 different producers and their families that, you know, generations there's even a producer named Cuvée de Vatican that literally bought the last parcel from the church. But those vineyards are all owned by the church. And the grapes are all the traditional grapes from that region. And the thing that's sort of interesting is that one of the famous things about Chateauneuf du Pape is the 13 grapes, right? Well, all the grapes came from somewhere. The vine's not indigenous there. So there's some that came from further east, there's some that came from further north, there's some that came further south, much further south. Carignan, you know, because as far as wine growing France, Chateauneuf du Pape is not an old region, you know. The Romans did not bring the vine through there as much as they did. They bypassed it. They went up the river to near Valence and the Hermitage Hill and all that sort of business, and they went west, but they didn't go right into that area. So the grapes, like Carignan, came from what essentially is Priorat and the Côte de Roussillon. Mourvèdre and Grenache both came from further south in Spain along the coast near Alicante. The Syrah that's there came from further north. When you look in wine shops and you see on Australian wine labels GSM, or you have someone talking to you about, you know, the GSM, Grenache, Syrah, Mourvèdre-based wines, the original GSM is Chateauneuf du Pape, and it's because those grapes all came from different places, you know, that they blended together because they all kind of landed in the same spot. And in different types of soil in that same area, the different grapes do well. And in different seasons, they give different characters. And the blending is what makes them interesting.
So are those the three predominant grapes in Chateauneuf?
They are. They're
pretty regularly?
The three most important. I would say
Grenache?
In order, Grenache is most important.
Okay.
And then Mourvèdre. And then maybe to me a distant third, Syrah.
Okay.
It's something that was played with a lot more, say, in the 80s and 90s, and I think has faded a little bit. The true beauty of Chateauneuf, at least to me, is when Grenache is speaking with a really clear voice from the right piece of soil. And there are different types of soil where it does well in Chateauneuf du Pape. And when it does, you have, if it's pure Grenache or close to pure Grenache with just a little seasoning from the other grapes, like, say, Chateau Rayas, that's grown in sandy soil, you have something that is hauntingly elegant, you know, but still has alcoholic power and still has sweetness, but it always has an edge of that garrigue, those Provençal herbs, that particular sort of, you know, it sounds silly and cliche, but almost like peasanty perfume that's somehow close to the earth, but it's just incredibly sexy. That stuff is amazing as it ages because it also gets almost like a truffly aromatic. It's very easy to think of La Beaugravière and the truffles with those wines. And he has an incredible cellar stocked with wines from that northern part of Provence around Chateauneuf and those villages and from further north than where he is, and from Hermitage and Corruti and whatnot.
Well, and one of the other interesting things about that region, Chateauneuf, is the way that the vines grow.
Well, they grow them in their bush vines, the Grenache anyway. The Grenache Mourvèdre, just like you see in the south of Spain, you see things that are planted not super close together, that are essentially like little bushes, And the trunks on the older vines get super thick and super
really
gnarly.
Really gnarly, yeah.
And they produce a small amount of fruit that has a huge amount of flavor intensity.
And the soil, which there's a lack of soil. It's all these huge rocks.
Well, that riverbed, that entire riverbed is where glaciers moved north, and they left behind in that particular place along that curve in the river, they left behind all these huge stones. Some are the size of footballs and even bigger than that. But so that, you know, and then that sometimes it goes down 3 and 4 meters.
You just can't imagine the first time you see it that anything could grow there, because it's literally fields of rocks.
But the vines, but the monks planted the vines through the stones into the soil.
And they struggle and produce this intense,
well
flavored.
Yeah, all the hottest vineyards. I think one of the reasons that those particular Grenache in particular was planted in a lot of those vineyards, and Mourvèdre both, was because they were sort of artificially heated further and longer during the season, because those grapes, they were still in the process of adapting to the climate there from being further south in Spain.
Well, and there's a value to the rocks because they're reflecting the heat from the daytime onto the vine at night.
They're still radiating heat in the evening, yeah.
Okay.
That's sort of an interesting. And it means different things for, like, the when you bush train those things, they end up having almost like a, if you're training vines on trellises, you have to sort of organize their canopy. When they bush train, they sort of organize their own. It's almost like a, and you're just kind of giving it a haircut from time to time.
Mm-hmm. Well, and the pruning process in the wintertime is very interesting as well. They have a very specific, they have all these requirements, don't they?
They do, and every grower has a little bit different theory about exactly how they're going to do it, and where they're going to cut it, and when they're going to cut it, and all that sort of business. It all has to do with how the fruit sets up the next season.
Sure. Well,
that is a super interesting part of the process. It's funny, you know, when you go through the vineyards, you know that Syrah is a grape that's being adapted differently to the climate, because you can see that that's trellis trained. Those are not sturdy enough to grow as bush vines. They kind of droop over if you leave them on their own, most of the grapes from further north, from less arid places, those vines grew on trees. They grew in forests. So they're meant to be climbers. The vines that grow, the Grenache, Mourvèdre, Sanseau, you know, those are all vines that are adapted to grow low to the ground as a bush in the stones. That's how they survive.
Tony, what are some of your favorite producers in Châteauneuf-du-Pape?
Ooh, what a complicated and fun question to answer, especially with
so
a corkscrew handy.
Yeah,
there's a lot of producers. I think that there are probably 50 or so that produce notable wines, which is a little bit of a shame, as many different producers as there are. I would say I have to like vote with my own cellar. You know, it's kind of like what do I have in the house? I have Chateau Rayas in the house. If I was going to do the great thing for the wine geek is to do artificial rankings of who are the Grand Crus and that sort of thing, you know. They're different. The sites are so different in Châteauneuf, and the owners are so morselated. In other words, someone like Domaine Marcoux, those sisters and the brother own 11 different parcels, red wine parcels, all in different areas. The most important bottlings of Villavigna all comes from one area, not that far, just below the Papal Palace in the town. But they own from so many places that you couldn't say there's a Grand Cru grower. You know, if you ever look on a map, what they call Lio-D map of Châteauneuf-du-Pape, with all the place names, the different sites, Rayas is its own site, and it's its own producer, and it's almost all Grenache, it's some sandy soil, and that definitely is easily, okay, that's a Grand Cru. Beaucastel, for very different reasons. Château de Beaucastel, super famous, and famously, it's almost non-intuitively, they're in the northeast of the Appalachian, maybe the coolest part, or one of the two really cool parts, not meaning cool like groovy, I mean cool like cooler growing. And they grow a lot of Mourvèdre, which really needs heat more than the Grenache does. So they get just a different flavor profile for the wine than other people do, and they get a different kind of density. Grenache gives much more body, but not as much density and not as much tannic power as Mourvèdre or Syrah does. So Beaucastel, I think, is another one of the special sites and producers. And the wines age very interestingly, but I don't find myself as emotionally motivated by those wines. Domaine Marcoux, who I had mentioned, Domaine Vieille Julienne, is also a great producer. big lusty wines come from Clos de Pape, who's a great producer that has a number of different parcels, mostly towards the south and the east. Some of the warmest areas, La Croix is the area that has a lot of the famous old vineyards for big Grenache power. So Clos de Pape has a lot of the vineyards there. Domaine Pigot has a lot of the vineyards there. And that's another one that makes big, lusty, almost porty sort of things. And they do it naturally. They do it with some level of grace. The wines will have 15 points plus of alcohol, and you're not going to notice that this is hot or this is trying to be syrupy or it doesn't have some weird artificial sucrosity that shouldn't be there. The wines are in balance because of where they're grown. There are producers now in Châteauneuf who have been sort of, let's say, points chasing, that have maybe artificially trying to manipulate their style to go in that direction, that don't have vineyards in those sites. And in that case, it's a little bit like the guy that works out only his upper body and not his lower body, and he's got the big shoulders and the little legs.
Mm-hmm.
You know, those wines just aren't put together the way they're supposed to be. So, but that's a few producers that I love.
Shall we travel to another part of Provence?
That sounds good. So where would you like to travel to in Provence?
I would like to go to a small village called Vaison-la-Romaine, and it's an old Roman village built into the side of this hill, and it's just really, really beautiful, and a lot of cute little shops and wonderful restaurants, and you can walk up into the old village, and it's a beautiful walk, and the view from up top is just spectacular.
It's definitely a walking town, and also an exercise walking town.
Yeah, yeah, you have to have the right shoes on when you're there.
Yeah.
And they do get a lot of tourists there, so it is a busy little village.
Isn't it right on the river?
It is on the river. And there's a restaurant there called Moulin à Huile, and the chef is Robert Bardot. And I imagine he's probably in his 80s now, but he's a very... very innovative chef and really works with all of his local products and his food is very, very satisfying, but yet it's very artistic and a little bit of a surprise because you feel the age of the town and you kind of expect old-fashioned food, and yet and frankly for someone his age, his food is very progressive. And but it's just lovely to sit along the terrace at the outside aspect of his restaurant along the river there, and you can see kids playing down in the river, and it's just a lovely, lovely setting. And his wife runs the front of the house, and they make a great team, and their food is really beautiful. And I think they have a pretty fun cellar there too.
That's Moulin d'Huile,
mm-hmm.
So the olive mill.
Yeah, exactly.
And is that Michelin? One star?
Actually, I'm not positive about
that. I'm sure you could find it in the Michelin Guide.
Yes. Well, you can find it online easily.
Yeah, that's definitely worth a detour to get there. It's been mm-hmm. some years since I was there, but it was excellent.
That's a great little trip, and that's not too far from Châteauneuf, so you could, if you want to include that in your journey, you know, that's...
Well, Châteauneuf de Pape, the village itself, is fun to see, and it's great to see the Papal Palace. I don't know if there are any great restaurants in the village. There's one very good one that I know you've had some very good meals in.
Well, you know, one of the things you should know that the palace is in ruins. We haven't mentioned that. So it was destroyed from many wars, but unfortunately really taken down during World War II. So there's really just one really solid outside wall, and the rest of it is... So it's kind of, you're going to see the ruins, so don't imagine yourself visiting some amazing chateau
there's not 48 rooms to walk through or something.
Right, no. And... the restaurant up at the top of the hill is right by the ruins, and we've known the chef there for a long time, actually, and he does very rustic cooking, and it's what's great is that it is up at the top of the hill, and you have an unbelievable view of the Rhone Valley from up there, and it's just a lovely place to sit outside, and it can be extremely windy up there. If the Mistral, which is the wind that blows through Provence...
Yeah, the Mistral is real.
Yeah. Yeah, it's can be, I mean, I've been up there where I thought my food was going to blow away. So, you know, it's a lovely place to go. And there, you know, you can, through the little village of Châteauneuf, there are little places that you can taste. And, you know, that's fun for people to do. And there are a couple of little shops. And there's a restaurant called La Mer Germaine, and it opens and closes. So I can't guarantee if it's actually open when you choose to visit. But it's sort of mid-level in the village and has a lovely view down the hillside as well. And they used to have outdoor seating. So if you can, we've had some amazing meals in that restaurant. And it's been up and down over the years, but it goes by the name La Mer Germaine.
super cute. North of there is a little restaurant, maybe north of the town of Orange. There's a very small town, little hamlet called Ushuo, U-C-H-A-U-X. And there is a restaurant there called Kotsud. And I recently ate there again and had a very good meal. And I would say that's one of the better values. They have lots and lots of wines from not just Châteauneuf, but from a lot of the other villages north of there. So it is super easy and not crazy expensive to get a few different things open. And the woman that runs the front of the house, she knows every grower she buys from. And she will tell you straight about what she has in the cellar. It's not a giant list, but the cooking is very good.
Yeah, the cooking is very good. Her husband's in the kitchen there. And they also have really pretty outdoor seating. That is one of my favorite places to sit. And you can't imagine the vegetation that's around that restaurant. And if it is, the wind is blowing, the trees are really old there. And it's just, it couldn't be more beautiful. Lovely place to go.
I'd mentioned Aix-en-Provence when we were talking about wine. And that is absolutely... That's the town to, on a nice day, just plan to walk. And there are a bunch of small bistros to get to. And it's a town, it's a shame to be inside 3 hours for lunch. As much as I like to take a 3-hour lunch, it's honestly go and have something simple and have something refreshing, have a nice piece of fish, and walk and walk and walk. The town is loaded with fountains. The town is loaded with historical sites. There's a ton of interesting shopping. And it's you can easily walk 3-4 miles. And just and take a there's several different recommended walking tours, like on the Michelin Green Guide, and terrific way to just kind of like, you know, roll your way through town on a pretty day.
There's so much of that in that region, and that's why it's just enchanting to visit. I don't think you can go wrong, really. You know, just getting in your car, being brave, you know, and go visit the nearest town, and then the next day go a little bit further. It's not hard to drive there either, if that's at all an issue for someone. I mean, I love to drive in that region. It's actually a pleasure.
They're two easy TGV stations, the high-speed rail stations, where you can hop off. One is Avignon, and the one that's actually maybe easier is in Aix-en-Provence, especially if you want to get to the Mediterranean.
Okay.
And that's a little bit further down the exact same rail line.
There's another town called Ile-sur-la-Sorgue.
Mm-hmm.
And that,
oh, it's a fantastic market.
The market there is amazing. The market's along the river.
Fantastic market, and it's loaded with little art galleries, too.
And antique shops.
Yeah.
I mean, if you could just bring some of those things back, it would be amazing. There's a lot of really great, amazing sort of shopping and to do there. Ile-sur-la-Sorgue.
Yeah. Last tip, town Nîmes, N-I-M-E-S. Great market. Huge market. That may be the largest market in Provence, because it's kind of where the roads, the A7 and the A8 split, is at Nîmes. And so everyone headed to the vacation house on the way down to the south of France, or whichever side you go, whether it's east or west, it seems like they stop at that market. That's a Saturday market. That's the biggest one I've ever seen in France. It's bigger than the market in Barcelona.
Very good. Sounds good. Let's go there.
Well, thanks so much for listening to Formula Wolf on Food and Wine, as we spent a little bit of time in Provence. We'll see you next time.